Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, mate. How you going? This is the Lethal Mullet coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network and, of course, the flagship show, the one and the only Lethal Mullet Podcast. Well, I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, ready to get into this amazing little episode, episode number 175, looking at Enter the Ninja. Now, this is a film which certainly is the one that got the ball rolling for Canon Films when it came to, well, the Japanese assassin, the ninja, you know. And before this, it was little known apart from maybe a James Bond movie and some great movies in the time of the 70s with Sonny Chiba and a few other action stars at the time too. And, of course, the Samurai TV show, which we used to see little ninjas going backwards into trees. Well, jumping back into trees and out of trees, which was a bit of trick photography they did at that stage back then. But tonight we're going to be talking about Shokosugi's first main claim to fame. Of course, this film pretty much got him into stardom when it came to, you know, being synonymous with being the ninja master. You know, he's a karate champion and sensei based in the United States at the time from Japan, and was well-versed in, of course, Kabuto, so all the different weapons from Okinawa, and, of course, in terms to also some ninjutsu weapons as well, which, of course, landed him the job here with Canon Pictures and, of course, working on Enter the Ninja in the Philippines. Now, this is a great film. I've always thought it was one that, you know, if it's on TV, I'll watch it. You know, I've got the Blu-ray, which was pretty hard to find back in the day, but now it's pretty prevalent everywhere. And out here in Australia, it's certainly one that you can get quite easily. And usually it's with Revenge of the Ninja, which is the second picture that Canon Pictures did, where they put the flip on it, made Shokosugi actually come in as the actual good guy this time, you know, as well. And, of course, it finished up with, of course, Ninja 3, The Domination. Now, I'm going to be covering each of the movies. I'm going to be covering all of them over the next couple of months, and we'll do them sporadically so that we don't jump them all together. We've got a lot of other films to chat about and definitely get into. But Enter the Ninja is pretty much the one that got the ball rolling. And I saw it on TV in the mid-80s, probably about 84, 85 it was. And, you know, it was one that I'd seen, Pray for Death or one of the other one's on TV, and my parents thought it was a bit too much, you know, for somebody my age at the time to watch, you know, this bloodthirsty ninjutsu stuff, you know. And it certainly was the thing of the 80s, you know. We used to go to the newsagents here in Australia, and there was a magazine called Ninja. And of course, you out there that are martial artists from the 80s will remember that one. That one was, you know, one that used to have Robert Bussey, and had, along with Robert Bussey, you'd have Stephen Cahaze, Masaki Hatsumi, and all those other, Doran Navin, I think it was, if I remember right. Trying to remember some of these names from the 80s. Obviously, Stephen K. Hayes still going. Frank Dukes was another one in there. Still talked about today, of course. Frank Dukes from, you know, the flame of Bloodsport, obviously, too, with Jean-Claude Van Damme playing his character. But ninjutsu was so popular at that stage because of those figures sort of coming through and, you know, in the real world, teaching what was supposedly ninjutsu and what is ninjutsu, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, we've got a different definition of it these days, thanks to some pretty damn good research by people like, of course, Anthony Cummins and a few others, which really get into, you know, what ninjutsu really was, particularly in the Sengoku period and before, and, of course, into the Edo period as well. You know, it was quite a bit different, but still just as interesting, if not more so. Some of the scrolls that Anthony Cummins uses now to really get back at finding what the ninjutsu of the old days, or the Shinobi no Mono, really was. More fantastical certainly was great for TV, certainly was great for, of course, you know, the movie screens, and Shokosugi certainly embodied all of that. And He did that as, of course, Hasegawa in Enter the Ninja, alongside, of course, the hero in this, played by Franco Nero, who was an actor I've always liked. You know, I've always liked his work over the years. You know, obviously, he's done quite a bit of westerns. You know, he was, back in the day, Django. You know, Django comes from Franco Nero's work at Spaghetti Westerns years and years ago in the 60s and 70s. And, of course, even later in Die Hard 2, where he played a general that's sort of being rescued and obviously they're trying to get him to an island or whatever it was. I can't remember the exact plot. That one's been a while since I've seen Die Hard 2. But what is fantastic about him, you know, he was a late addition to this movie. They had a star originally planned, and this was a martial arts, actor slash stuntman who really was the brains behind also, I do believe, the story, if I remember right, too. And it's, you do see him in one of the American Ninja films. I think it's the second one where he plays actually the lead ninja henchman slash villain towards the end of it too. But we're going to get into all of that and more. You can see I'm pretty enthusiastic about this film, folks. I like it. You know, it's White Ninja versus the Black Ninja, which was obviously the, you know, really good and evil at the time. You had Red Ninjas, which were kind of like the henchmen in it as well. Everything's cookie cutter, and it's got some really interesting villains in it too. This is a pretty fun cast, I gotta say, for what it is. It's quite dated. Yeah, there's without a doubt it's dated, and it's certainly an element of what that is to be in the 1980s and more. But folks, we're going to get into it more all here on, of course, the Little Mullet podcast tonight, and we're going to chat some ninja here right about now. G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Little Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Little Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shea Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network, please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
And now, it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
So we're clearly back in podcast land, folks, after a short and brief holiday. I've been pretty much podcasting for almost 3 years straight, no break whatsoever. Had to put the brakes on for a little bit just to catch my breath. I've got to say, folks, breath is now caught and ready to chat some great and fun films and, of course, much, much more. Now, today, I put out a bit of a recommendation for, of course, a film you know I've talked about on here a number of times, even covered an entire episode. That is, of course, The Paper Tigers, folks. And, you know, what more could be said? You know I like it. And I hope that you, the listeners out there, have gone and checked out this great film, particularly in the martial arts field and particularly if you like comedy. The Paper Tigers is one of those films which tugs on the heartstrings. Also tugs on the comedy strings too, folks. This is quite a funny movie. But the characters are very there, present, there with you. It feels like, you know, dear friends that we've all had in the past. And, of course, you know, it's very relatable in the terms of particularly if you're in your mid-years. You know, me, I'm in my 40s. It related, you know, a lot to the struggle I have of trying to be as fit as I can for my age, but also at the same time realizing I can't keep up with, of course, a lot of the young athletes as a martial artist. Apart from that, it's just a fun movie. And, of course, apart from the amazing cast, you get quite a funny character. And, of course, Master Ken from Ameridute is in it as well in a quite a fun little role. He gets thrown around by the three leads quite well. And, of course, Master Roger Ewan and, of course, his brother in this as well. Roger, of course, worked on Dune and many other films. Of course, Shanghai Noon, he played the lead villain in that one as well. He's quite good in it, actually. Really, really good in it. He's always been a fantastic actor, bulletproof monk as well, and always been somebody who's studied under Chuck Norris's system, the Chun Kuk Do style. Very practical, very tough, and anything, I think, well-versed in a lot of other styles, particularly for fight choreography. And you can see that in Dune, a lot of Filipino stick fighting coming in there with, of course, taking the stick out and putting blades in there instead. So you could see that in, of course, some of the work that was done on the Dune film. Now, if you go and check out at the Lethal Mullet on Insta and obviously the Facebook page as well, I've been actually showing off some of those sorts of techniques using actually a very sword-like, well, it's very much like the swords used by Gurney Halleck and, of course, Jason Momoa's character, of course, the one, the only Duncan Idaho Indian. And this is done with a ninjutsu blade. Now, this is a short machete-like sword, quite a straight sword, but you could pretty much use the same arcs and definitely the same techniques used in the Filipino stick fighting to do exactly that. And, of course, the Filipino arts, you can actually see a lot of that with their own sword and knife work as well, which, again, is second to none and is one of the most, I think, well sought after when it comes to systems, when it comes to blades and sticks. And of course, even Kalian Eskrima itself is just fantastic. Go and get yourself out to a class and go and check out some of that stuff. It is phenomenal. I certainly can say that it's one that I've had a chance here and there over the years to train with some friends that are definitely very adept at the arts from Philippines. And many and much respect to all of those. Now, folks, we've got a lot coming in the next couple of weeks here on the show. We're going to be capturing the energy of some of these great shows. One that's just gone out literally Monday that I'm recording this episode right now is one called 80s Animation. And it's covering Jason the Wheeled Warriors and, of course, also covering the real Ghostbusters. Two very beloved series. And we could talk about some others here and there. But without a doubt, those are some of the best when it comes to, you know, highly sought after films. And of course, this is something that you, the listeners out there, have asked for, is a little bit more coverage of some of these great animated classics. After we did the Gundam special about 12 months ago with, of course, Kyle Wagner of FPN. And of course, Kyle being the founder and definitely the Doc Brown of FPN. He's the one that knows everything and certainly can certainly put it together when it comes to keeping these channels running, and certainly helps out here at the Lethal Mullet with technical expertise and stuff like that. So hats off to Kyle. But of course, his history with, of course, animation, he's one of those guys that just has the general knowledge that we need to really get down to what made these shows great, and of course my own as well. Now, in the coming weeks, we're going to be catching up with some of the great films which you've either seen or not seen, and some of the influences also, some of the biggest films that you have seen in your youth or even just now. One of those is, of course, Zoo Warriors from the Magic Mountain. Now, if you haven't heard of this one before, I'll tell you what. This is one that really did put it on the map, some imagination for director John Carpenter when it came to Big Trouble in Little China, of course. There's all-star cast starring, of course, Yuen Biu, of course, of Wheels and Meals and Project A, one of the three great leads that was always in some of the best work, of course, of Sammo Hung, and, of course, the amazing Jackie Chan. Of course, you get to see in this one too, in a smaller part, of course, Sammo Hung as well. Sammo worked on the fights on this one, and this is directed by a legendary director, of course, you would know very well from his work on, of course, some of the bigger films out there. Of course, Once Upon a Time in China series. That's, of course, Choi Hark. Choi Hark is pretty much like the Steven Spielberg of the Hong Kong film industry. He's really pushed out not only great action-adventure epics, but also really brought special effects and, you know, the epic scope to films in the 80s and 90s. Zoo Warriors from the Magic Mountain was the influence to Big Trouble in Little China. And you could see it very much so in some of the fantasy setting as well. Now, what's interesting about this one is that Zoo Time Warrior is a special cut that was made of the film and was given to Western audiences. This one is actually in the Blu-ray edition from Eureka, which I've got. This is a beautiful print. It looks fantastic. Now, the original film itself is set in the old times, so in pretty much ancient China, I guess you could call it. And it is literally, you know, with magic and kung fu and swordplay, certainly in that wuxia genre. And what's great about it is, as a, you know, hitting that genre, the different cut that you get, this time-traveling cut of the film, is even different. It has Yuen Biu in modern times, and it takes him from modern times to the past and him becoming a warrior. And it kind of, I suppose, a bookend, if you like, to the movies, where you see it from the modern times to the old and the modern again. Now, him being a time-traveler and all that sort of stuff with it as well kind of brought our audience in that. And then you could certainly see part of that into Big Trouble in Little China. So I do believe that cut may have had an influence on it. Well, we'll certainly find out when we research this one. But the film itself is absolutely gorgeous, and I can't wait to go back over it again too. I'm hoping that there's a commentary on this one too, because Eureka's been really good with it. They've had some really informative and amazing you know, behind the scenes stuff on there that I've never seen before. And I've got a lot of the DVD cuts of these ones too. So we'll be getting in that too soon. And John Cena's 12 Rounds. Now, this is a film which certainly isn't on the same budget as, say, a Die Hard film, but with the Die Hard director, and arguably one of the better directors out there, folks, Rennie Harlan. You know, he's done some great films, Cliffhanger being one of them, of course. 12 Rounds, you know, is up there with that. And, of course, even Die Hard 2, which he directed as well. John Cena, I'm not the biggest fan of, mainly because I just haven't seen a lot of his material. I think he's a perfectly good actor. And, of course, he's got the wrestling background with WWE. But got to say, 12 Rounds is a very clever film. It's in that sort of Die Hard 3 or Die Hard with a Vengeance feel where, you know, Aidan Quinn, it was Aidan, I've got to remember the, Aidan Gillen, sorry, from Game of Thrones, plays this bad guy. He's basically a thief
who's trying to get away, and in this one, he gets caught, and a year later, goes after the cop that caught him, and puts him through a series of games after he kidnaps his wife. And Cena really plays it, you know, in media res is the best way I could probably say it. He's certainly somebody that's in the moment and uses, I think, some of the great, when it comes down to it, great, you know, acting devices to get those sorts of things done. It's fantastic. Bit more of a serious film we'll be covering soon too is, of course, the true story Bat 2-1 or Bat 21. Now, this is a great film directed by Peter Markle and, of course, starring Gene Hackman, Danny Glover as well. And it's also got Jerry Reed, David Marshall, and Grant Clayton Runner as well. Now, this is a film based on the real story of Lieutenant Colonel Icil Hambleton, who was shot down in Vietnam on a mission and lost in the jungle. And he has to find his way to the water, to the Swanee, where he can get out and the Navy can come and pick him up and basically get him back. Now, he's such a, as they call it, a full bird colonel. So that means, you know, all the bars, I guess, on the rank. He's one that the enemy want to get because, of course, he'll have all the information needed to, of course, you know, help them get to the American lines and, of course, do damage. And, of course, in this we have Danny Glover playing a bird dog who's basically a spotter in a plane who goes around and actually helps the colonel on the ground get to where he needs to. But the real ingenious plot device in this, and it's a true story, is that they used the maps of various golfing locations on U.S. Air Force bases all over the country to then help mask and code where, of course, ISIL would be going to. So it drove the enemy nuts because they didn't know where the hell he was going and didn't know what he was talking about because of all the golfing terminology being used. It's a great film. It is, you know, it's not a funny film. This is a real film, of course, of the Vietnam War. And there's many great documentaries you can check out on YouTube about similar things like this. And there's even one on ISIL Hambleton itself. But this one adapted quite well, based on a book too, if I remember right, as well. By William C. Anderson. There you go. And, yeah, so we'll get into that. We'll talk about a little bit of the history of that. And, of course, you know, the hard times that, of course, ISIL Hambleton went through. And, of course, the men that went out there to try and rescue him.
Hi. Mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know. Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
Mate.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage. And enjoy the show.
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
In 1981, Menahem Golan directed what would be the start of a media franchise and certainly a whole genre of martial arts films. Even though the ninja had been pretty much out in a lot of material before, you'd seen him in Shogun in a limited capacity, working for the samurai families to take out some on, of course, Torunaga's side there, of course, in that film, based on, of course, the epic Shogun novel. But in 1981, they come with the idea of a film which would, of course, pit a good ninja against a bad ninja in the Philippines, starring Franco Nero, Susan George, Shoka Sugi, and, of course, Christopher George. It's about a character who's a martial artist, a ninja, by the name of Cole, played by Nero, who's going to visit his friend Frank in the Philippines. When he gets there, he learns that his friend's being harassed by Charles Venerius, a businessman and, of course, criminal who's trying to buy the land and force, basically, Frank way off the land so that once he's got it, he can get all the oil underneath and the wealth of what would be underneath his property. Charles Venerius and his minions make many attempts to try and force Frank and his wife off their property, but Cole defends them a number of times using his incredibly and versatile ninja martial arts skills. Once Mr. Venerius finds out that, of course, they have a ninja He hires his own, and of course, Shokosugi, and of course, rival of Cole's, playing the role of Hasegawa, the black ninja, and the one that can, of course, cause more havoc than his own ninja. This is a great film which really does, in its main element, present the ninja in what it was always meant to be when it came to theatrics. It was directed by Menahem Golem, of course, of Canon Pictures, with the co-owner. Screenplay by Dick Desmond, based on a story by martial artist Mike Stone. Mike Stone was meant to be the lead. He was meant to be playing Franco Nero's role of Cole, and it was a star vehicle to get him to be a big action star. But things didn't work out with him and the director, and I guess creative tensions behind the set. And then they had to change the lead, and of course that's where Franco Nero came in, and more on that a little bit later. Cinematography was by David Gerfinkel, and of course edited by Michael J. Duthie and Mark Goldblatt. The film itself was, of course, made by Golden Globus Productions, and of course distributed by the Canon Group and Columbia Pictures out our way too. Do you actually remember the Columbia Pictures logos all over the VHS over here in the back in the day? And that was from Australia's version of Blockbuster Video. Yeah, we had a Blockbuster Video just by name in the 80s. I do believe that was something that, you know, I hadn't remembered for many years. And then I remember, oh, God, I'm going that down there in Underwood and Logan City in Australia. So it was released in 1981 for around 100 minutes of Ninja Mayhem. And on a budget of $1.5 million, it made a box office of $15 million. So you can actually see that, you know, it's an interesting, you know, idea that they had. Obviously, shooting in the Philippines might have been cost-effective, you know, cheaper than obviously shooting in the States at the time. So it was originally directed, it was meant to be Emmett Alston, and of course, meant to star Mike Stone. Now, Mike Stone, well known to martial arts circles with karate and many other styles. He's obviously somebody who's kind of been involved in a lot of different fields over the years. So, this being based on, of course, the story you've done, let's have a look at the actor himself. So, Mike Stone, born in 1943. He's a retired karate fighter, choreographer, stuntman, actor, author, and motivational speaker. He was born in Maui in Hawaii. He's a stylist of Shorinru Karate. His teacher was Herbert Peters and is a 10th degree black belt, or 10th Dan. So he had a first introduction to martial arts with Aikido. And this was then followed after he had been in the U.S. Army with Shorinru Karate. Now, Shorinru is, you know, very, very hard-style karate, very strong, very rigid, and certainly very traditional. So it's interesting, great, obviously, to see that that one is the one that he chose. It's quite an interesting karate style. Then he became a bit of a tournament champion in the International Karate Championships up near, of course, Long Beach, California. And, of course, he's done a number of books on karate and martial arts in general, too. Obviously, he's been in circles with, of course, Chuck Norris and, of course, Ed Parker. Of course, Ed Parker was the one that instructed Elvis. And, of course, my favorite, Jeff Speakman, with, of course, American Kenpo, which we'll cover a bit more of Jeff's stuff soon with, of course, Street Night and some of the other movies that he did after The Perfect Weapon. If you do want to catch some of the Jeff stuff on this channel, you can look at the back catalogue where, of course, about 2 years ago I did The Perfect Weapon, which without a doubt is the best Kenpo martial arts film too. So with that too, he's also been working as a bodyguard for record producers. It also worked alongside in and around Elvis and Priscilla Presley as well. But what's interesting too is that, you know, I guess it, being in those circles too, he got to know Priscilla quite well. And, yeah, obviously being in the Elvis circles too. And, of course, they became a romantic couple as well at the same time. Now, he's had a number of championships too with karate through the 60s. into the 70s as well, and certainly was somebody that people looked up to when it came to karate. Come to the 80s, of course, and he'd started to be involved in movies. And, of course, this was one of those. Fast forward to the production, and Alston, the director, Emmett Alston, was replaced by Menahem Golan. And this was where he also kept the director on as a second unit director. And then Stone, obviously, was taken off the production and replaced with Franco Nero. But he was also in the film as both a fight double and a stunt coordinator as well. And, of course, he hung around for the American Ninja films later on, folks, as well. So he's certainly involved in some capacity in those ones, too. I do, obviously, his second one, he actually is one of the ninja villains in that one, too. But we'll cover that at another time when we cover that film. So it has certainly got a cult following because it is the first of Cannon's Ninja Trilogy, basically an anthology series, and that is, of course, with, of course, Revenge of the Ninja and Ninja 3, The Domination as well. These films pretty much launched Shokusugi into, television and, of course, into your households in the 80s. We wouldn't have Shokusugi if it wasn't for this film. This film really put him in there and, of course, gave him the gig pretty much afterwards of The Master. And that was a great series too. Kind of a play on Enter the Ninja almost with Lee Van Cleef as one of the leads. All right, so let's have a look at it. Cole is a mercenary and veteran of the Angolan Bush War and is a ninjutsu student and completes his training in Japan. Now, we see this at the start, where basically he is up against Hasegawa or Shokusugi and many other ninja cadets, you could probably say, which is, you know, it's a perfectly classic ninja opening. It is very 80s, folks, you know, jumping from trees and ridiculous outfits and using blowguns, archery, ninja stars, nunchucks. Yep, nunchucks, folks. But even the opening of the film itself has a great bit where we see Shokusugi go through all the weaponry. And obviously he's known for his adeptness when it comes to weapons. I think a lot of the stuff that we see is not Franco Nero in the outfit. I think it is, of course, Mike Stone. Without a doubt, come on. Mike Stone would be able to pull off some of those great moves that we see Cole do. So Cole afterwards goes to, of course, meet his old war veteran pal, Frank Landers. And he's got a new young wife by the name of Marianne Landers. And they own this massive farm in the Philippines. Cole turns up there and basically he sees that they're being harassed by Charles Venerius. He's a CEO of Venerius Industries. And Venerius Industries are trying to get a hold of the Landers property to steal it out from under him and, of course, take the oil. And, again, it's not really worth much as a farming thing. It's only for that reason. From here, Cole helps Frank and, of course, he gets to a point where he has to infiltrate the actual base itself. Takes out a number of the henchmen, and from here, Frank believes that there's something going on behind everything. And, of course, from here, he is also getting drunk and tells that he's not able to be with his wife properly. So Marianne then has an affair with Cole. So obviously, like 80s, you've got to have drama, don't you, folks? They have an affair. And, of course, Frank gets very drunk that night. And this is when Hasegawa comes and attacks. He's been hired by Charles Venerius to end everything, kill off the Landers, and so that they can get in and take the property. Hasegawa finally gets into the at night, killing Frank and, of course, kidnapping Marianne. And this was what drags Cole out and into the light in Venerius' building. And, of course, from here, we see him downtown where they go to basically it's like a Muay Thai or a cockfighting a place in the Philippines, and they have this massive battle in there. And, of course, on with the one, the only, Hasegawa versus Cole. But got to say, hats off to Charles Venerius. He's hilarious in this movie. And that's pretty much the crux of the film, folks. You know, it's a great series of action beats as we go through the film, pretty much following on as each basically amplifies to the point where ninja will verse ninja again. At the cast, we've got Franco Nero, obviously, once being Django many years ago in the Westerns, and, of course,
He plays Cole. Now, he's revoiced by an American actor by the name of Mark Smith. As you probably know, if you've seen some of the material Franco's done over the years, you know, his accent doesn't exactly sound like an American accent, so they redubbed it. But he's perfectly good at this. Actually, he's got a very funny scene, particularly those that are martial arts. You can clearly tell that he's just picked up this weapon. And that is, of course, Franco Nero, without his shirt on, doing a routine with nunchucks. Quite hilarious, actually. But 10 points for trying there, Franco. Good boy. We've got Susan George as Marianne Landers. Sho Kasugi as Hasegawa. Christopher George as Charles Venerius. Now, I'm going to check out some of this gentleman's work because he is quite fantastic in this. Hams it up very well. I mean, it's a very cartoony villain, without a doubt. He's known for westerns. He was Sergeant Troy in the 60s, the Rat Patrol. There you go. He was in the military. He was a U.S. Marine and based in Jacksonville, Florida. And he's inspired by John Wayne. But in this, yeah, he plays the bad guy, the head of Venerius Industries. And he really is quite a magnificent specimen in this. You know, he's very funny. He has quite a few very Bond-like henchmen under him in this. Sadly, he passed away in 1983, only at the age of 52. So he's only very young when he passed. But I think he's very good in this. So let's just see some of the other stuff. He'd been in the Marine Corps Air Station at Quantico, Virginia, where he's stationed, and maintained the aircraft for the pilots there as well. And from there, of course, moved into he was a sergeant in the Marine Corps Reserves, joined the Marine Fighter Squadron as well too. Interesting. Always interesting. I found that the Marines have their own, pretty much their own Air Force, if you like, as well, which is really, really interesting too. He's got also some military awards. He got the Marine Corps Good Conduct Medal and the National Defense Service Medal as well too. He's had a number of non-acting jobs as well. And he held black belts in karate and judo and worked as a bouncer in restaurants when he was younger. So there you go. He's had actual martial arts career as well. So who knows? Venerius may have been able to take on the ninjas himself with judo. I tell you what, folks, judo is one of the few out there. I mean, John Wick will tell you not to be messed with. I tell you that. So let's have a look at some of the smaller theatre productions he involved in. When he got to acting was All My Sons, The Moon is Blue, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Starlag 17, Who's Afraid of Virginia, and also in some Shakespeare work as well too. And of course, went on to do some TV commercials. And he also landed a role in Harm's Way in 1965, playing a sailor. And he got to meet his hero, John Wayne, in that one as well. And worked on El Dorado and Chisholm and the Train Robbers as well. So there you go. And I think, yeah, he does a fantastic job in this one of just, it's not too campy, but it's certainly heading into that Bond villain territory, without a doubt. Frank Landers, played by Alex Courtney. I don't know too much about Alex, but he's perfectly good as, you know, the sort of bumbling friend of Cole in this, you know. A veteran who's let himself go. He's enjoying the riches and sort of just enjoying his wilderness years, if you like. Will Hare plays Dollars. Zaki Noy plays Siegfried, the Hook Schultz. Now, he's probably the funniest of the actual bad guys in this. And he just gets thrown around by not only his own crew, but also, of course, the one, the only Frank Landers' own private bodyguard, Cole, and this as well. But he's good. He's even got his own when it comes to the hook that he uses on his hand. Constantine Gregory plays Mr. Parker. Again, it's sort of a butler to the character of Venerius as well. Dale Ishimoto plays Komori. Junie Gamboza plays Mr. Masuda. Leo Martinez plays Pee-wee. And Ellen Emile plays the Maroon Ninja. And Doug Ivan plays the Maroon Ninja as well. So these some of the many ninjas that we see in the film at the start. Enter the Ninjas, based on the story by Mark Stone, and, of course, was presented to Menahem Golan. And from there, they got the idea of wanting to do a ninja film. From here in 1980, the whole idea was to get this movie out there and use Mike Stone pretty much as a launch pad, and of course his story too. And they shot the Philippines and in Tokyo, Japan as well. And from here, we get mainly Manila, but with a lot around too. We had the idea of using, obviously, the countryside and that too. What's great about it is, again, it's known for really putting ninjutsu, particularly in a theatrical setting out there. It's quite interesting. And the legacy of this film really goes down to the fact that Shokosugi would go on to really dominate the ninja, the ninja field itself, and he did a fantastic job of it with Revenge of the Ninja, and of course, even Ninja 3, The Domination. And of course, we also brought in a director in the second one, of course, Sam Furstenberg, who would go on to direct many of the other ninja classics, of course, two of them being American Ninja and American Ninja 2. And we have covered American Ninja here many eons ago, so it's another one of the back catalog you can check out on the Lethal Mullet podcast as well, too. Ninja 3, The Domination, certainly wasn't one that Kasugi liked working on as such because it really put him in a smaller role and capacity, but it was more of a heroic ninja role as well. This movie has been put out by Eureka Video, and it's part of the trilogy pack you can get. Eureka put it out too with, of course, Revenge of the Ninja in a double pack, and Ninja 3, The Domination, which is now being put out too. And it's quite an amazing little pack, and it's a great little Friday night at the movies. Now, this certainly isn't Enter the Dragon when it comes down to the reviews of this. This is a film that was, you know, commercial enough to get things out there, but also it really is a cult film because everyone just loves the fact that it's about ninja. How does it rate on the Hallenbach scale? Folks, this is 3.5 out of 5 here and, of course, the one, the only, Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at. There, you can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also, check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.